Hello, I'm Melissa Cohen, the creator of the Relationship Roadmap Home Study Program. And in this session, we are going to talk about driver's ed, learning to communicate. Communication is like learning to drive. It's a skill that requires practice to achieve mastery, especially if you were not taught the skills as a child. So I want you to give yourself a little grace, be a little bit forgiving with any of the mistakes that you make in communication, and just know that you, by taking this course, are already trying to do better. Having poor communication is like leaving your car engine running with the car in park. You're stuck and you've stopped trying to move forward. It's bad for the environment. You can't really think clearly. And if you breathe it long enough, it will kill your relationship. I often say that lack of communication is the carbon monoxide of marriages. It is truly the silent killer. There are so many excuses that seem valid to explain your lack of communication, like you are exhausted, too tired to talk, too tired to listen, too tired to even think straight. However, a lack of communication breeds two serious toxins for your relationship, apathy and resentment. And once apathy and resentment take root, they become very insidious and affect even the simplest of situations. If left unchecked, these seemingly inconsequential moments of non-communication accumulate into larger patterns of apathy and resentment. So if you've ever find yourself fighting with your partner, but you don't even know what you're fighting about, a buildup of these small resentments is likely to blame. So let me give you an example of a couple who was dealing this in the very early stages of becoming parents. So we'll call them Michael and Jennifer. They are the proud parents of a brand new baby girl, and they are committed to keeping their marriage healthy. So they eat dinner together so that they can catch up on each other's day. It's a priority for both of them. Unfortunately, the baby tends to get fussy in the evening and often needs to be held while they're eating. They don't discuss how to handle the situation at all. One night, Jennifer juggles the baby on her lap and eats over the baby's head. The next night, Michael figures that it should be his turn and holds the baby and tries to eat over her head. But Jennifer is so nervous about the way that Michael is slurping spaghetti over the baby's head that she takes the baby back. Michael feels a little bit nitpicked, but says nothing. Night after night, Jennifer holds the baby and while they're trying to eat, and she begins to feel frustrated and resentful that Michael no longer offers to help. Michael doesn't offer to help because he figures that Jennifer would ask for help if she wanted it, and he does not want to be criticized for the way he holds the baby or the way he treats the baby in general after a long, hard day of work. So this is a great example of how one seemingly benign incident turns into the seed of resentment that later begins to color everything that Jennifer and Michael do together, especially with regard to the baby. They don't talk about how to handle it beforehand, and they don't talk about what happened after the fact. They both just assume that the other one is fine because neither one of them is really saying anything about the way that this really isn't working. So they don't come up with any solutions, and they just sort of stay stuck in this resentment, feeling that this is just the way it is. And apathy sets in. And this resentment and apathy really primes the pump for this negative sentiment override that we discussed in module number one. Here's an example of when a seemingly innocent comment can really be the spark that sets off the powder keg. So I was treating this couple, and one of their conflict and resentment points during the day was when they reunite at the end of the day. And the husband would always ask the wife, who is a stay-at-home mother, "What did you do today?" And this really got under her skin. She never really talked about it, but just saying, "What did you do?" made her feel like she had to justify her existence with some sort of productive thing that you know, mattered a lot. So it wasn't just good enough that she, you know, kept the house and did the groceries and carted the kids to activities and did all their homework with them. Because it was all these minor things that didn't seem to add up to much, she felt sort of less than, especially when her husband was talking about all of these important decisions he made all day, and she was home making all these micro decisions that really don't seem to amount to much. So until we sat down and really figured out what is it about this moment, about reuniting, that makes it such a difficult moment. And when we figured out just the way that he asked, what did she do, set the tone for her defensiveness, because it was already built on a ton of resentment. So this tiny little comment, what did you do today, which seems so innocent, really set off horrible feelings toward him. He was oblivious as to why there seemed to be tension at this moment, but he certainly felt like he wasn't being welcomed home, which was a difficult feeling for him to experience after a really long day at work. By making the tiny, tiny little tweak of saying, how was your day, instead of what did you do, everything seemed to go much more smoothly. And ultimately, it became a ritual where they were able to talk about how they were experiencing their day rather than what they got accomplished that day, which had been setting off the feelings of defensiveness. So often it's these tiny, tiny little incidences that we don't talk about that build up and really can make your relationship feel tight without any clear reason as to why. So as cliche as it might sound, the reality is that we really do need to talk. So let's not cringe when our spouse says we need to talk, even if it leads to conflict. As you remember from the first module, it is a myth that a happy marriage is one without conflict. Conflict will inevitably come up in all relationships, and it's the way that the couple copes with conflict that will determine whether or not there will be a sense of positivity or negativity in the interaction, and ultimately whether or not the marriage will thrive. So now I'd like to give you some rules of the road regard to good communication. The first rule is what I call, it's my mantra actually, it's not the what, it's the how. Now what do I mean by this? Oftentimes it's not the actual issue that's being discussed or the information being shared that causes a sense of tension. It is how that information is communicated and how it is received. So by that I mean I do the what is this versus the what the fuck is this test. So imagine that you're entering a room, and as you walk in, you take in the scene, and with curiosity, you sort of ask yourself, what is this? And even by saying, what is this, most of us say that with curiosity, with open palms, sort of ready to receive the information without judgment. If you come into the same exact situation and you say, what the fuck is this? You're basically starting out with judgment, which of course leads to everyone else in the situation becoming defensive. And when we say, what the fuck is this? We usually are saying it with our faces, you know, very constricted and our arms folded across our chest and in a much more abrupt and terse tone than anything that's said with curiosity. So I want you to just, as you come to the situation, think about not necessarily what it is that you are questioning or reacting to, but start and take a beat and say, okay, I'm going to come at this with curiosity, not with judgment. So that's really the key in it's not the what, it's the how. When you talk about any situation or any issue at hand with openness, with curiosity, suspending judgment, it's going to go better than if you're coming at it with a sense of judgment and closed-mindedness. The second rule of the road when it comes to good communication is nobody likes a know-it-all. What I mean by this is when you're having a conversation with someone and you're trying to clearly impart whatever information you're trying to give them, and the person doesn't really receive the information, he or she is just sort of looking for a quick ending to the conversation and keeps interjecting as if they know what the speaker is trying to say. So they're acting like they already know everything and they don't need to receive any new information. But of course, the speaker feels that they don't understand, that they do need more information, or that it's important for the speaker to express this information in this particular way at this particular time. So when you act like a know-it-all, you're really deflecting and devaluing what the person is saying. Connected with nobody likes a know-it-all is the third rule of the road, which is most of us actually cannot read minds. The truth is that at our core, we have an unspoken wish that our partners will intuit and meet our needs without us having to articulate them. Obviously, this is a fantasy. We must not resent our partners for making us ask for what we need. And likewise, we shouldn't be ashamed or guilty to admit what we do need. So rules number 2 and 3 actually go hand in hand. The fourth and final basic rules of the road are that everyone gets a do-over. What I mean by this is, imagine if you are an actor working on a movie, and imagine if you had to get everything right the first try. So there was no take 2, take 3, no option to correct what was already done. So I want you to focus on allowing both parties in the communication to give each other a take 2. We don't have to get it right on the first try. And usually the first try is just the reaction to whatever we're hearing. And the take 2, you can pause and say, let me try that again, or let me ask a question to clarify. And it allows you to create the moment again without judgment, with open-mindedness that was probably missing from the initial reaction. So here's another example of a benign moment that, when taken out of context and when, you know, people are acting like know-it-alls, they needed to do a take 2 without judgment. So in this example, the husband comes home from work and they're talking about their days, trying to reconnect. And with a, you know, long exhale, he says, I could really use a vacation. Now, the wife, who is the one who manages the finances in the family, jumps right in and says, yeah, of course I would. We both deserve a vacation, but you know, it's just not in the cards. We don't have the money for it. I don't know where you think we're getting this money. We got to pay for this and we got to pay for that. And she really jumped right in on the reaction of the moment, like, no, we can't. I don't know why you're suggesting this. And because we had been talking a lot recently about allowing each other to have a take 2, the husband simply said, we need to do a take 2 on this. Because all I'm trying to tell you is how I feel. That I feel tired, that I'd like to talk about a vacation. Even if we can't do it now, maybe we can do it at some point, or at least have the fantasy about it. So in the take 2, he says, oh, I really need a vacation. And his wife, rather than, you know, staying in the reality of the moment and they can't possibly do it, says, me too. Where do you think we should go? And they literally spent half an hour talking and laughing about the places that they would love to go, what's on their bucket list and why. Wouldn't it be great if they could just leave the kids and they would somehow magically take care of themselves? And it really became a great conversation and a great connection point. So when we're able to either ask for a do-over or to, you know, check ourselves and say, I'd like to do a do-over with that one, when there's no judgment, when there's no resentment or closed-mindedness, it really can foster a moment of great connection, even though what they're talking about, the issue that is at hand, of course, is a no-go, but they can still enjoy talking about it. It's a connection point. So now that we've covered the basic rules of the road, the basic rules of good communication. It's time to move on to some tips about how to move from conflict to compromise, since conflict is inevitable. So I'm going to break this down into two parts, one when you are the speaker and one when you are the listener. So let's begin with the speaker. The first job of the speaker is to describe the situation without criticism and without blame. However justified you feel in blaming your partner for whatever is upsetting you, this approach is just not effective because it taps into that resentment and defensiveness. This is actually very tricky because often when we feel upset, we unconsciously look to our partner, and because we sort of have this fairy tale of how our communication should be or how things should be going, we look at them and say, I'm unhappy, it must be your fault. So it sort of is ripe for blame and ripe for, you know, criticizing and character assault. But it's really important to put those things aside and actually to not enter into a discussion if you're starting out with this feeling of, you know, contempt. I'm right and you're wrong, it's your fault, because it just simply won't go well. So one tool to get in the right mindset, in the right way of communication, is to make statements that start with I instead of you. And this is sort of couples therapy 101. I statements are less likely to be criticism. Of course, you can come up with I statements that thwart this general rule, like, I think you are a total jerk, I think you're a jackass, I think you never listen to what I say, but we both know that's not going to lead to a productive conversation. So in using an I statement, you would say, I feel like I don't have your full attention right now. I feel like you're not listening to me. Can you please tune in a little more sharply to what I'm saying? Or, I really need more from you in this way. Or, I really need more for myself in this way. Rather than saying things like, you know, saying things like, I really need a night out with my friends. Instead of saying, you know, you always get to go out with your friends and I'm never able to make plans because I'm, you know, stuck at home watching the kids. So you can see one is just a statement of how you feel and what you need. I really need a night out with my friends. And the other is a character assault on your partner, really blaming them for your unhappiness. The next tip is to be clear with what you are trying to say. I can't tell you how many times I've sat in a couple session and one or the other of the partners says, I just need more support from you. Now, I don't know about you, but I have no idea what that means on a practical level. What does more support mean? Does that mean that you need me to be more present? You need me to take over one step task? You need me to just have your back? I have no idea what I need more support means. It just won't produce the desired effect because it doesn't tell the listener what actions to take to improve the situation. So it can sort of, you know, asking for support can sort of set the conversation up to seemingly go well, and the person will, of course, seemingly agree to give one another more support. But then what happens is that it seems like, you know, both parties don't really follow through on giving each other support, because how can you follow through on something that you never really quite understood in the first place? So it's absolutely critical to be clear. And in our worksheets attached to this module, we'll talk about really how to get your needs met, both in terms of practicality as well as your emotional needs met. And the final tip for the speaker is, don't let problems build up. When we store our problems and hold them to our chest as if they're, you know, every single one of our hurts is a treasure that should be held onto, the problems escalate in our minds. So sometimes when we don't have the actual conversation, we review the conversation in our mind over and over again as if we're actually having it. And as I said in module one, your body doesn't know the difference. It doesn't know that you're actually in a conflict or whether you're just imagining a conflict. So often we avoid conflict only to burst later. So let me give you an example of this. there was an issue that this couple needed to deal with. And every time the one partner tried to bring it up, they stopped themselves because either things were going kind of badly and there's no point in trying to have a, you know, good communication when things are already going badly and there's already a negative sentiment. And then when things were going really well, the spouse didn't want to, quote, ruin it by bringing up something that could lead to conflict or tension. So what resulted is, because there was no, quote, unquote, perfect time to bring up whatever was bothering them, what had been held tight before, the dam sort of burst, which causes emotional flooding for both parties. We both, you know, both the listener and the speaker were in a place of overwhelm, and, you know, the limbic brain was really taken over. And as we talked about in module one, when that happens, when you're in complete physical reaction mode, no productive conversation can take place because, you know, like we mentioned before, you're literally not in your right mind. You can't come to a calm conversation from this point of emotional flooding. So don't wait for the perfect moment. There is no perfect moment. And let's face it, the journey is very long. And if you want things to go smoothly, you might as well speak up when they are happening or shortly after, review what happened so that you won't be building up a problem until the problem finally bursts and you really have to like pull over for some roadside assistance because you're, you know, at this point just in a huge argument. Now for the tips for when you are the listener, which is actually the more difficult position. So when you're the listener, you really have to focus on understanding your partner's perspective, which means that you have to listen really well. You can't get distracted. You have to actually be able to understand and reflect back what the person is saying for them to feel understood. So you have to postpone any type of persuasion or any type of defending yourself because it just won't go well, and the person will feel as if you're not listening to them at all. So a lot of my couples say, but what if I have to ask a question? And I say, that's fine. You can ask a question, but you need to maintain the focus on your partner's experience. And a lot of times what happens is there is a rush to jump in and fix the problem or offer a solution. That doesn't go well because that assumes that the speaker cannot handle the problem themselves, and that leaves the speaker feeling devalued, which is not a good place to have a successful discussion from. You need to validate that your partner has the right to his or her point of view. Now, again, this is validation that they have the right to have that point of view. Maybe you can even see one part of their point of view that you can actually agree with. But even if you can't, even if you completely disagree with everything that your spouse is saying, you have to say to them, I can see how important this is to you. I can see that you're really in knots over this. I can see that you have the right to feel this way. That is so critical because until you have understanding, there can be no conflict resolution. There can be no movement toward compromise if one or both of the parties is feeling devalued and that what is so meaningful to them is not being honored. So a lot of times when I'm working with couples, these seemingly innocent little problems or, you know, discussions that, you know, sort of explode and nobody knows why is usually because there is a core issue or a core value that is not being either articulated or it's not being met. And so the speaker feels that they have to really say over and over and over again, over and again, and over again, because they don't feel understood and they don't feel like their position is honored. And of course, the listener, you know, feels they want to defend their position.
And it's hard sometimes to validate the listener's point of view. They have a right to think that way. But without honoring both sides, the compromise really won't stick and the conflict really won't be resolved. It'll sort of be hanging there like with like a little bit of negative residue coating the end of the conversation. So it's important both the listener and the speakers are coming to the table with their own sense of core values, their own needs, things that are very meaningful to them. And you want to create an atmosphere where both parties can talk about these core values, what needs to be met, so that the conversation can actually lead to progress. Now, because this is so hard, especially for the listener to slow down and really make sure that they're getting what the speaker is trying to communicate, when I'm working with couples in my office, I often ask them to write down what their partner says and be prepared to summarize their partner's point of view. My patients tend to really hate this initially because they feel like, I don't want to sit here and write notes and da-da-da-da and I don't know how to listen. There's a lot of resistance to really sitting down and writing it out. But the reason that I do this is because the writing slows down the conversation. So the speaker will probably have to speak more slowly and to sometimes repeat what they're trying to get across. And the listener has to suspend their defensiveness in order to get the message and be able to verbally reflect it back. The other thing, this is a little sneaky trick, is that a lot of times the listener will tense up and hold their breath, which of course is not good for your body and to be receptive and open-minded. So when they're writing, they actually start breathing again. They no longer are holding their breath or bracing because the action of writing helps to sort of get some of that energy out as they're trying to sit there and, you know, and be contained. It lets a little bit of steam off of the pot. And again, most couples don't get it right on the first try. So it's a process of going back and forth and really asking the person, the listener asking the speaker, this is what I heard you say, is that right? And then the speaker can either say, yes, that's right, I'm ready to move on. Or the speaker can say, well, this part of it is right, but this part of it, you're not really getting the spirit of what I'm trying to say. And it can go back and forth in a slow way, focusing on one side of the conversation at a time. Because if you're jumping back and forth where both partners are being the speaker and the listener alternately back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, that tends to rev things up. When we focus on one person's point of view until it is really understood and validated, then we can move on and switch roles and listen to the other person's point of view, the other person's core values, what they need to communicate without feeling like no one really got understood or, you know, one person was listening more than the other. It really sets up a system where both parties can feel heard and understood. With a healthy dose of patience and kindness, you can come to a compromise on even the most difficult conflicts.
So as I mentioned in the beginning of this lesson, that good communication is a skill and it requires practice to achieve mastery, especially if we're working from, you know, a disadvantaged position, not growing up in a family where good communication was the model that we have to base our interactions on. You have to practice these skills, even if it's hard or even if it's awkward, especially, you know, going back and forth on conflict management. The more you practice, the easier it becomes, and things will naturally flow more smoothly once you sort of know how to sit down and have a conversation ready to be productive and open-minded, and one in which you really are coming to the table with the purpose of hearing each other and honoring each other's point of view. So make sure you check out the downloads of the summary of this session and the worksheets attached to it, because again, That's where the work in progress will take place. So just by listening to this lesson, you are armed with new information and material to really improve your communication. Thank you for listening, and I will see you on the next lesson.